for the organization. Now, mind you, this hasn't gone through the study business. They suddenly want 6 airlines, or 6 ashtrays, or whatever, cities. And it doesn't go through the system. It's additive, and it has a fair charge on it. So the shop people get pretty chewed up at some of the soft pitches, and they're coming through all the time. Many times it's to repair something that wasn't your fault, or something like that, and you always throw in a big estimate if you can get away with it. And the people doing it never did it themselves. They're clerical type, professional type, but they don't really know what it's like. And a good shop man, good foreman there, would razzle dazzle and make the room back at the lane curve, and I got this triangle here that would cost, and so forth and so on. So they build it up if they can. If you think third man will walk out into the shop and ask, and he was given many types of treatment, and it's financial. So banking is a big part of it. And then the other thing is to shift the difficult job back and forth that you can. Now the industrial engineer that's doing this work takes to go over and keep shuffling stuff. But it kind of waits for the shop to wake up to it. Now, shop people, we began giving the shop people at least one person called an hour control meeting. And he usually had a couple of people there. Now, he's watching the hours, and he turns hours in to the unit accounting system. And if he can hold back, in fact, he may test the water. It's very common thing to try to get away with something to see if it works. And that's a human trait too. Well, you're always competing with that. And my view was a little lacking in all of this, and I would just assume they get away with a certain amount. It's for the good of the order. Everybody feels happy if they're getting away with something that management hasn't caught. So there are times when I'd be talking to various people and something would come in and they were beeping about the cost or something like that. I would usually ask the superintendent, are you guys banking on this job? And that's all I would ask. And they knew ahead of time that I would not do anything about it. And if they said yes, then I knew what to say. If they weren't banking it, it was a tough job. We were underpricing this fare, and I began to say, my God, that's it, and you've got to put some more on top of it. So this, the whole network of things going on, and they haven't got the computer accuracy of feeling things out precisely all the time. Although, of course, what I'm talking about here nowadays is going to do the programming. But you, underneath it all, you've got to allow for this little bit of life that we all need to have, and the thrill of getting away with something. And not everybody loves top management. And if you can talk to your kids in later years and say, well, we have a system going that nobody ever caught. And the main thing is, don't believe they never caught it makes sense to and let people get away with it. So.
On riveting, if there was an error and the riveter had to be drilled at, would the riveter make the decision to drill it out, or would the riveter?
The inspection. Well, this again, you don't go to the phone away, it would be done. If you put in a bum rivet, there's no use for you waiting for the inspector to inform you to check it. Drill it out and put another one in.
Now, would you make a decision about what next time rivet to replace it with?
Oh, yeah.
You
change the size of the rivet. Mm-hmm. No, you don't have that authority. But you can drill a rivet out and leave the hole the same and put another one in. But if you put a bad rivet in, gosh, he knows it's a way for somebody coming to it. He heard it put another one in his place. But if you are crushing in that 6/10 of an hour, it's going to run out on you. You say, well, maybe they won't come. Or maybe, and you can look at it. We're not talking about livers that are absolutely no good. Mm-hmm. It's going to fall out.
Yeah.
We're talking about they're not as good as they really should be. So, your lead man or foreman is a person. The worker is the first level of inspection. He finds out he did the work the best of his ability on the work order.
Mm-hmm.
The lead man or foreman then finds out that this is the best his group can do. The company inspection then comes in and says it's no good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we used to use the tabulating system, much like if you get a printout. You have a card, and you got a printout that had 80 pages on it there and could cover a lot of information. And what you do, you never use names, you use numbers. Because people finding the name you can't read them, or they purposely can't read them, so the inspection have stamps with a number on it. And different kinds of damage material, mm-hmm. and rework, and dumping of different markings in the shape of the stamp. But to have a number so you get back to the person who did that. Well, what we did, we punched cards on the squad like that. And then we would, at the end of a month, we'd make a tabulating printout, which would be sorted so that you could tell who made the most errors and who was signing territory. So we'd take, at one time we gave, if we gave you a worker a stamp, we'd give you 5 cents an hour or more,
mm-hmm.
more, years ago of course. To do a good job with your inspection stamp. Well, if the printout showed that that individual was putting out sloppy work, you took the stamp away and you took the nickel away, and in a sense, they lost something, because they were not trusted now. They were added to the stamp. And the printout would always show the same people making mistakes. The printers would bunch up at the top. You'd see the same number of things every month. I think we actually got it down to weekly. And you didn't fire them because some people don't have the proper dexterity, either a tweezer or a finger. So you're moving to a clerical job or something like that, but you got to get them out of the way. It's like the drivers that small percent or half a large percent of the accident. Somehow or other, if you get them out of the car, you'd be better off. Well, in our case, we get them out of that particular job. Now, it may have been a precision job. You can move them over into a utility job. Or you have to move them into a clerical job.
Mm-hmm.
Or you set a probationary period, and if it isn't met, they're laid off.
Because
at all times, you've got to control the quality. And it used to be that the quality control ended with the last guy up there. But I feel it's harped on that in World War II, that, hey, that's too late. You want the guy that made the part to go on the line and say that was the best he could do. And that became a bit of an operational approach.
Mm-hmm.
Because it isn't the nickel or legal. I don't know what they're doing nowadays. But the principle, everything we're talking about, the principle is the same, whether it's a typical jet or what it is, nickel or spacecraft. These things are all there by some kind of a label. And because you're so next to it. And so many things can go wrong with this rivet you talked about, and it may go all the way down the line with everybody saying, well, it's my view. Okay. Don't forget it's been goosebumps. So you see a mark, a black zero in that rivet, maybe three in a row. You got three little hash marks like that. And then it's written down. So you can walk over and look at them, and if the company inspector says they're not bad enough, he okayed them and stuff. And the customer comes in and looks at it. And he's now not looking at everything, he's looking at squat.
Is this something?
That is no good.
Mm-hmm. Or just marginal.
Well, you go a long line like that, and the workman, he isn't too apt to reject. He's going to hope it slips through.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're making parts out in fabrication, they do the same thing. Mm-hmm. And they've made a bum part, or all the parts are wrong in the setup somewhere. And they have a nasty habit of turning them in into a good part. And that then calls for an inspector to check it. If the inspector isn't awake on that, or unfortunately, on marginal items, many times the foreman will intimidate an inspector, or he is friend or something, and he'll agree to pack it to his marginal. And then the customer takes a look at it and says, how the hell did you get this far? You should have fixed it at the start. But again, some of the work is tougher than others. Some of the rivets are tougher. Some of the big rivets that take heavy equipment to set.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them are what they call flesh rivets. And the skin has to be dimpled and the flesh rivets are there. So the varying degrees of riveting that you may be getting one and not in another.
Mm-hmm. But when I start in one and then move up.
And be in the wrong one, for instance. And get moved over into a simpler rivet that you can see that has your head sticking out. And then you can be a little freer there.
Now, would the riveter also alternate buffing, or would someone come in as a buffer and someone come in as a riveter?
Well, they can, for just the sake of the monotony, they can switch back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Or in some cases, the guy that's riveting is inside an enclosed area, and his head's rattling about an hour later, and you get the other person in to go inside and use the outside. The whole thing, again, is using judgment, is helping people, and trying to make it work. And if the company is giving you enough guidance to do these things, and everything is explained, there should be no excuse for everybody not doing a reasonable day's work and reasonably accurate.
Now, who would make that decision, for instance, about alternating them? Would that be the workmen or the workers themselves?
No, the team itself is it. Yeah. Uh-huh. And then sometimes the buffer is sick and stays home, and you got a riveter here with no one to buff the riveter. You got to pull somebody in, or you got to put the riveter on another job.
Mm-hmm.
All these things happen, of course. But generally, the foreman, they tend to leave things the way they were set up, because you may have inherited them.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but the foreman, there's quite a few foremen that fall into this, and general foremen and superintendent came in with the planning and tuning people way back then and decided he could live with this. And now he signed off that tuning and the work assignment and everything was okay. Now suddenly it comes down and he goes to work. And he finds that he made a miserable deal. Well, he has to appeal it. That would be supervision going on because they participated in. Now the worker, he That's it.
Oh, I'm looking around.
Oh, okay. I thought there was another meeting scheduled. The workers, you know, if I don't like the driver of it, and you're a junior, and I intimidate you or whatever, you're going to get on the sad end of the riveting problem. And riveting inside an employee is pretty miserable. Now, of course, they finish his plus.
Did the company finish anything? The women talked about wearing cotton in the wrist, but was that on their own?
That used to be, yeah.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of cotton used. Now, of course, it's much like safety glasses. There are areas of work where you must, as a visitor or as a worker, you must wear clothes. They tried all kinds of stuff. Little ones that stick in, and then the ones that go over and muffle you, and so forth. That's not now, every type of
In terms of the distribution of women on different jobs, in fabrication, what percentage of the direct labor in fabrication would you think were women during the war years?
Okay, then we have to qualify again with what stage of the program we're in.
Mm-hmm.
If we're in the program where we're putting out 3 a month, that means very few parts go for fabrication. So the person that does the fabricating has to be what we call a multi-skilled person.
Mm-hmm.
When you get into high production rate, then you get the single skilled, where they only do one thing. And at that point, the one thing it's hard to apportion it. I would say that during high speed production, due to the availability of the people, you might find 1 out of every 5 to be a woman in fabrication. I just would have a rough feeling there. And the tendency to keep unskilled labor out of where the parts are made, because if the parts are made right, unskilled labor can put them together. If you got 4 holes here and a bracket with 4 holes, and you slap it up there and stick 4 bolts in, that's very simple compared to putting the 4 holes in the bracket back in fabrication, particularly if there are more than 4 holes and the fasteners change and that sort of thing. Then you've got multiple skills. Somebody has to use, it might be a single skill of drilling, but you use different drill cuts. You change your own drill, things like that. Single skill drill, somebody come in and here's the drill, here's the drill, drill all the parts, put the drill in there, and the setup man runs out a couple hours and says, see how this works, and look at the part and examine it, and then put them over in the bin that you do, and somebody will pick them up when you're done, that you found them when you're done. So there are varying degrees there of skills. Now, with the breakdown, if you have sufficient production, and you have 3 different size drills, or you drill and then you spot face, or you counter things, and do other operations, which requires a change, you can take that to another operator if the production rate is high enough. You pay for itself. But if the production rate shrinks down, then the motor skills come into it. Again, it seems to be a judgment thing of when to be there. Lots of times it doesn't get done. Nobody gets over to that part. Or you think somebody else is doing it, or the backlog is up. And so someone is not doing enough or doing too much, or they need to hire somebody and they didn't. because you've now put the skills level down and you got four times as many parts in the tube, so you need another operator, and one floor down is selling overtime, and that gets monotonous after a while, but I guess most people are overtime bugs. But this drill press out there would be great not to hire anybody else due to quantity. That took me 7 4/10 hours in the 8 hour day before, and now it's going to take 2 hours of overtime. And it seems so easy to assign the overtime that you go ahead and say, yeah, I don't want to hire somebody and make the part of the owner. We don't have enough drill pressers, there's all kinds of things. The first thing you know, at the end of the day, the overtime gets consumed. Got all these people on it. And you think you'll have to investigate everyone to the training authority, and people buy cars and houses on the overtime pay, and then that's taken away, and bang, you can't move the payment. So.
I have one last question. And that is, in the figures on the percentage of women in direct manufacturing that I've gotten from you before, that will include everyone beginning
direct
with fabrication, indirect. It begins with the fabrication.
Direct and fabrication and
assembly.
Everything to do directly with the product.
Now, that will then include also as women begin to move into the supervisory position, the direct manufacturing will include the supervisory, the floor supervisory level, the floor, the lead and foreman.
Well, usually you find that your supervision goes over into indirect, which is ratioed against the direct. Now, let's say that under the old lead man deal, if you had 400 people in assembly, each lead man would have, ultimately you'd hope to have on average 10 people. So you'd have 40 lead men. But the lead man punched the clock. So he was a direct charge. So that supervision went in. But then that changed now. So now you have 40 people, what they call foremen, and they're in the indirect side. Now the only difference between direct and indirect, if you could possibly do it, you would charge everybody directly to the product. But because a person changes jobs too much, in fabrication, one or 2 hours you're making C-47 parts, and then the next you're making A-26, and then B-17, and then C-74, and then you jump back and forth like that. The time ticket for supervision gets too great. Then supervising all over. So you call it indirect, and you say that for every direct person, on the same way of installation and fab, every direct person carries, say, a percent, and 40% or something like that for the foreman. And that clerical would be in there, or the purchasing people would be in there. So. Now you have three, you have big categories of costs that you give to them. The engineering cost is separate. The tooling cost is separate. When you get down in the fab and assembly and installation, that's a big category called manufacturing. So each of these three groups has direct workers in it, and each of the three groups has supervision that's indirect. So the indirect is based on your history of how you load the people. And it's just like buying equipment. For instance, in tooling, in the main given picture department, every time they hired 15 people to build tools, assembly pictures, that type of tooling, every time the violin 15, they automatically order a 300 amp pipe router. Now that meant that the company history, this is in New York, this meant that the department that was making these assembly systems, large systems, not the little drill rigs and machine tools and so forth, that you just didn't pay any attention. If you hired 15 people, it automatically generated an arc welder because those 15 people generated enough work to acquire an arc welder. Now this group may not have generated very much, but the next group generates a lot. So it's found that certain pieces of equipment can be ratioed against the people you hire that operate them. Floor space can be allocated the same way. You allocate the entire floor area based on history. And how many people you have. You can't help but realize that you got to find space for them to move around in. You got to have documents, and you got to have aisles to run stuff through. So there's a whole bunch of ratios that takes place. Now the ratios, of course, can take place in what those hours that they estimated, which get converted into heads. Allowing for overtime, you may find that on the average it's 47 hours in a week. But some of them don't always come to work, and some of them work overtime and so forth. So you have experience again, after the culture. And you're hiring talented people, requiring engineering degrees, or business administration. You have another set of standards that, depending on what school you came from, I think the Harvard engineer is worth $20 more than a UCLA engineer. And a UCLA engineer might be worth $20 more than a Pepperdine engineer. And you have all these curves, and then depending on what the grade average was, and everything gets ratioed.
And with the expediters and the stocking, of course, we did have them in the stocking considered as part of the direct manufacturing.
No, they were indirect.
Okay.
Simply because they were taking all parts.
Yeah.
And could not be charged directly to the product. The drive is always the same charge to the product. But then you have to leave with once you arrive at a decent spread. Because if you keep changing, you can't get the people that are trained out in the shop, so they don't know where they are. But the worst part of it is you can't build another product, airplane, if you start changing because you extrapolate history. That's what you're working on all the time. So again, the ratio of the maintenance. Now the computer tends to lend itself to ratio beautifully and crank out. There's no complicated sideways.
Well, that's helpful in terms of understanding the percentage of women in different places than they were before. This has been incredibly helpful. I hope that you can keep the rest of the day now.
Oh, yeah, no, I don't know why I don't know.
But it certainly gives, hopefully you can now ask that question more intelligently. The interview people having an overall sense of the process.
Yeah, most of this stuff I haven't thought of. I think one or two before.
Doesn't sound like a good one.